podcasting. Who would have ever thought? Yep, we're still in Bolivia, and I've got a treat for you on this edition of the World Rider Podcast. This was recorded a few nights ago after the very first day I got back on dock and rode with Jeremiah from Sucre, by the way of Santa Cruz, planned to step off at Valle Grande. To say that it was a smooth and easy day would be fibbing. So why don't we just segue right to the campesino from our campsite and tune in to this podcast. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned as usual. Oh boy. This is the first day, official day, loaded gear for me. The first official day after those 9 long months and after a long 2 weeks in Sucre, the long awaited reunion with Jeremiah. We're at the end of the day, it's about 8 o'clock at night. And by the sound of it, I would expect you could maybe guess we are outside. But that's putting the term lightly. We're in the middle of a campesino, just about half a mile from a pueblito, a really tiny town. There's no hotels. There's barely even a restaurant. We saw one tienda, a little store. It's called Valle Garnado, I think is what the name was. For a first day out that I really wanted to go a little lightly, I could say this is one of the tougher days I think I've had since I started this fucking journey. Jeremiah's sitting next to me. We've got our tents set up under a big tree. We're off a side road about a quarter mile from the main road. Our bikes are parked under the tree and our tents are set up. Jeremiah, overall, comments on today, the day, and what happened.
Well, yeah, as you described, we're under this tree in the moonlight. It's a very pleasant evening, although we're a little concerned about some clouds round about. It might rain, and if that happens, the river crossings we've experienced today could get a whole lot worse. Also, just a little while ago, a few campesinos actually walked down the road in the moonlight, saw us here camping, and communicated with them a little bit. That was a little reassuring. One guy said there are no bad people here, so we should be safe.
And I'll just note that we are camping because we lost daylight, and we were trying to cruise very slowly, but came across a water crossing that we would have been foolish to cross during the night. So we backed up through town, and here we are.
Yes, we got out of town and found a place a little farther away from the little town where we'd be off on our own and be safe. But like I said, we've had a couple of visitors so far, and it looks like we'll be cool for the evening. The day, it's been quite a first day for Big Al, I know. We were expecting to kind of take it easy the first week, stick mostly to pavement. But you know, in Bolivia, that's tough because there almost is no pavement. If you want to go anywhere, you've pretty much got to go off-road. So we are on what is really considered a main route here in Bolivia from Sucre to Santa Cruz, the largest city in the country. But if this is the main route, boy, I'd hate to see the side roads because it is very windy, rutted, gravel, some places sandy, switchbacks. No bridges over these many multiple river crossings. A few bridges, but a lot of places where you just sort of have to dive into the mud from recent rains and see it through. So what was it, about midday, I think, we hit our first significant crossing where the mud was deep, the water was so turbid that you couldn't see the bottom. And it was difficult to see how deep we would sink with all of our gear and how slippery it would be. So I felt the best route was off to the left, a little bit upstream, where we could sort of, it was very hilly and rocky, but
to put it mildly,
a little less slippery anyway. So that's where we came to our first impasse, and with no further ado, gave it a go and got to the other side.
Well, I would have to add in a little commentary. I right prior to hitting this, where the dirt, once we came into the next apartment here, whether it's the Cochabamba apartment or I'm not sure, Santa Cruz department, which is like a state in the United States, is when the road went from pavement to dirt. And within a mile of that, we went into this big dirt rut, and it was kind of narrow, and I was not perfectly aligned center, and my pegs were scraping that thing, and a car was coming the other day, and I just felt like I was going to fall over, but fortunately I didn't. And then we finally get to a little town. We see a photo op, and there's a little restaurant there, so we decide, let's just get something cold to drink, because the heat is burning here. It's just baking us. And this is just about a quarter mile from the crossing that Jeremiah was just talking about, and my heart was pumping 100 miles an hour. I mean, I was... in fact, I in my back of my mind, I thought, fuck it, I'm just going to turn around. I you know, I'm not ready for this. Poor Jeremiah put up with my whining and complaining. And, you know, even at that crossing, I suggested, Jeremiah, I don't even want to do it. Why don't you ride my bike? But, you know, he of course, didn't want to do that. And I did make it through. So that was event one of the day. We finally made it. The road got a little bit better, but still, like he said, sand, rocks, stones. We got to Aikiki. What's the town? Aikiki? Anyway, it's the turnoff for Santa Cruz. And out of this town, we start climbing. You know, we're going from about 5,000 feet up to about almost 8,000 feet. And... Jeremiah should probably pick it up here, but I got to the top of a nice vista and was looking out, and maybe 10 minutes before Jeremiah had been taking some photos down, the lighting was just getting real nice, and I'm waiting at this curve, and it's a significant cliff that drops down several hundred feet, and I'm looking in my rearview mirror, trying to get a classic rearview mirror photo as Jeremiah came winding up this dirt road, and just then a truck passed me. And I thought, okay, well, that's going to be a little tanglement for Jeremiah, but I guess it was a little bit more. Jeremiah?
Yeah, I didn't think it was a big deal. There was an 18-wheeler. You know, these trucks are just covered with dust and have tarps all over them and whatnot, but these truck drivers are like none other. I mean, they ply the back roads that in the United States wouldn't even be considered passable. But he's chugging on down the hill, and... typically what happens when I get into a tight spot with a truck like that, I don't even try and do battle. I just pull off to the side and stay stationary so he can see me and negotiate his truck around me, as opposed to having two moving objects. There's only one moving object. I didn't really realize how close to the edge I was. Only later when I looked at photos that Alan took, was I above a very large rock wall. But anyway, I was stationary and felt pretty solid as the guy came around. He had adequate room. I mean, not a lot of room, but he had adequate room if he swung wide to take his trailer around. Thing is, the guy was not stopping. I mean, he wasn't moving fast, but it seemed fast because it's just this giant truck coming down on me. And I'm starting to lean more and more over towards the cliff because I realize he is so close to me, and his trailer, the rear wheels of his trailer, are coming closer and closer and closer. He's not slowing down. He's not stopping, which he should, because I'm sure he could see me in his rearview mirror. And as he got closer and closer, I'm literally leaning as far as I can lean without dumping my bike and myself over this precipice. And sure enough, the back of his trailer, the rear metal, you know, guard rail of his trailer literally impacts my left aluminum Jesse pannier holding all of my equipment, and he literally pushes me over with this several ton truck, and I take a spill down into these boulders that are there, all good size, but you know, varying from a orange size to a giant watermelon size, but good size rocks. It wasn't dust or sand or mud, it was rocks. My bike goes down, and the seat and whatnot, the steering is down further than the wheels are. In other words, it's a little bit upside down when it finally comes to rest. I sort of jettison myself from the bike, fortunately don't go over the edge, and I start yelling at this guy because I can't believe, one, that he's done this to me, and secondly, that he's not even stopping.
He didn't even stop. No, I mean, the guy didn't stop, and I watched this part of this in the rearview mirror, and from my perspective, I couldn't. I was still, you know, I was 150, 200 yards away. I could not see what happened. I had just assumed that Jeremiah had lost some footing or, you know, got a little, as the truck got a little close, he just kind of, again, you know, balances everything. We've got these bikes loaded, and I start running down the hill, make sure he's okay, of course, camera in hand, and then I can kind of hear Jeremiah yelling, and I'm wondering, okay, and he's yelling up at me. He says, "The guy ran into me. He hit me." So that was drop one of the day. Fortunately, there were no injuries, but it could have been horrible. Those rocks make the Tika Tika mud look like, you know, the Galapagos Islands.
Yeah, I was really lucky, number one, that he didn't crush my leg between my bike and the truck, or literally push me and the bike off over that precipice. So, you know, that said, it could have been a lot worse, or just falling down in the boulders there. But my windshield is broken. My handguard is pretty well scratched up. My mirror was busted in. But I was able to more or less get all that piece together, and tomorrow I'll try and glue the windshield back together. But I started losing brake fluid right away with the bike being upside down like that, so we didn't take too many photos before we had to right the bike, which was no easy feat, even with two people, because of it was literally upside down at that point, kind of teetering on one of the Jesse bags. And when we got it upright, we looked at the Jesse bag toward the truck, and you could see right along where he literally pushed me down by scraping the bag with this several-ton truck. So, and this is all in a whirl of dust and cloud and noise, and, you know, it wasn't a quiet experience. It was all, you know, a lot of commotion, and then I started yelling immediately, not because I was injured, because I was yelling at the guy to try and get him to stop, because he was such a jerk in doing this to me. But anyway, that was drop number one.
That was drop number one. After the fear factor of number one earlier in the day, then probably an hour later, and we're only going about, you know, most we can get is 25, 30. I think I had it up to 35 at one point. It's really loose gravel, slippery. You know, the front end of the motorcycle is just squirrely as all hell. There's sand. We come to this water crossing again, and it is a muddy mess. Jeremiah and I scout the scene. He goes first and decides to take the high road, the dry road. It's a lot of sharp, angled rocks from, you know, sizes of small lemons to, you know, again, you know, orange and even watermelon size again, and some of them really sharp. And it goes across this riverbed, and then it gets really sandy on the other side and very muddy. He makes it over there, and then gets stuck just briefly. We get him out of the sand, and so I survey the situation, and there is a little high road that's not as through the technical high rock, and I've got a little more weight than him, and I'm not as an experienced rider, and I'm also freaking got, you know, butterflies in my stomach, and I'm just nervous as all hell as having been my first day on this world ride. Anyway, I take the high road, or the medium road, I guess we'll call it. So it's partially in the mud, but what happens is I miss my line, and I don't exactly know what happened. The front end kind of maybe slid down from some mud. So anyway, I go through the puddle. All's good. I get actually through the puddle, and from Jeremiah's perspective, he could tell you exactly what happened as I finally pulled out of the puddle, which was probably about 20 feet long, correct?
Yeah, I'd say it was even a little longer than that, 25, even 30 feet. It was pretty long. See, the trucks have made a mess of this. It's where the water crosses the semblance of road, and when these large, heavy trucks go through there, they create these large ruts that make it tough for the motorcycle tires to turn in, because you sort of hit the wall on either side. At the same time, they cause the water to pool up there, as opposed to just passing by.
So they create a pond, if you will. And I took some great photos, although we were losing our light. It's very dim, of Alan on the other side before he started to cross. So you can get a good idea from the photographs how long this mud was. So coming through, yeah, he was looking pretty strong. Even had a wake going. Mm-hmm. And had a good straight line. But as you pull up out of the puddle, the mud gets slipperier because you're on an incline and because it's been sort of mishmashed side to side from all these trucks. And there's not a lot of truck traffic, so don't get me wrong. This is very occasional. A truck will go by. But it's enough in front of us or behind us to create these conditions. At any rate, just as he was coming up out of the mud, the front tire sort of catches in the deeper part of the mud and sand. He turns to the left and sort of does a complete 180-degree fishtail. As he fishtails around, he loses control of the bike. The bike goes down on the left side. He sort of jumps off in time, so his body isn't trapped like it was in Tika Tika, thankfully. But the left Jesse pannier pops on both of its posts and winds up flying off, and the bike comes to a standstill, literally facing 180 degrees towards the water in the mud with the box and the dry bag that was strapped to the top of it at rest somewhere there in the mud, too. And we got some good pictures of this, so you'll see them on the website.
So that's, obviously getting out of the mud and rigging the bags back up. We do have a little bit of a problem with the Jesse bag. One of the posts is tweaked, and fortunately I have some backup posts that Al gave me April or something like that. I mean, long time ago. I've been toting them around. It's part of the weight I've been carrying, but it's good to know I've got them. But we finally get the bike moving again and roll into this village where we realize there's no hotels. We decide to continue on, find another water crossing, as I mentioned, and decide to retreat. So we're camping. It's a beautiful night. Tents are set up. And we're just delivering you this special edition podcast after the first official day of my ride. So more to come, I guess.
Yeah, let's look forward to better things tomorrow. In fact, we know right past this village, we've already scouted in the fading light maybe our biggest water crossing yet. So, and it's a muddy mess as well because of the trucks and the conditions. So bright and early, Alan.
Who would have ever thought?